Oh, and you're listening to The Optical. Welcome to episode 24 of the Optical Podcast, where we're revisiting the history of VFX films and movie technology through the lens of Cinefex. Tune for your chance to win a one-year print subscription to Cinefex magazine later in the show. This episode, I wanted to look at a different section of film technology, that of projection. Projection already made the leap from film to digital years ago. Laser projection. To get a look at this new technology, we visited the Pacific Science Center in Seattle, Washington. Public relations manager Caitlin Del Buco was kind enough to set us up with an interview with lead projectionist Jen Bentz, who oversees screens, but who, it turns out, has some nostalgia for film and also worked as a projectionist on the recent Hateful Eight 70mm roadshow. Caitlin, it's Mark Bosco. Hey. I guess at like the main front entrance, the Kiewit Pavilion entrance, is that where we're supposed to be, or?
It turns out that was not the right entrance, but Caitlin was kind enough to come and get us.
So I'm going to take you over to meet Jen Bentz.
Okay.
Jen is our lead projectionist and kind of our AV guru. She's been at the Science Center for a while.
Okay, great.
So she has seen the transition between our old projection system, which was completely film-based,
right,
to our new laser technology. Yeah. And so a little background on the projection system here. The laser technology, we're the first Science Center in the United States to get this technology. And I believe the third movie theater in the United States. It's more widespread now, but
right,
in April of last year, we were among the very first. So, yeah.
Very nice.
It's going to be great. And this is Jen.
Hi.
Hey, Jen.
Hi.
I'm Mark Bosco.
Nice to meet you.
Nice to meet you too.
I'm Amanda. Nice to meet you.
You too.
So I'm going to leave you guys to the interview.
Okay.
Excellent. Thank you so much, Kim.
Yeah. Have a great night, you guys.
Thanks.
Thanks, Jen.
Yeah. No problem. We could probably actually go around the other side of my booth. The projectionist is usually up there, but that's
okay.
All. And they can either just keep it down or just sit there and listen in, and we can go over up there.
Okay.
So.
Sure. That sounds great.
The sneak peek on your way by, and I might bring up some other questions for you.
Okay.
Photographer Amanda Smith and I up the back stairs of the Boeing IMAX theater and through the darkened projection booth where we could see big, dark, ominous boxes that were projecting lasers out into the auditorium. But we'll get to that. Me, let Jen introduce herself.
So my name is Jen Bentz. I'm the chief projectionist at Pacific Science Center IMAX theaters, both Boeing and PACCAR.
Can you tell me a little bit about the path that led you to becoming projectionist there?
Yeah, I was at high school and needed a job, so right next door was a movie theater. And I became an usher there first, and shortly thereafter became assistant manager and chief projectionist.
Was that here in Seattle?
Just south of here in Kent.
Okay.
So when I decided to go to school at the Art Institute, study multimedia, I decided it would be much better to have a job near where I was going to school.
Right.
And there was a listing that just said, local movie theater needs an usher. And I thought, I can do that. I can handle that.
Nice.
And it turned out it was here about 2 months after the Boeing IMAX Theater had opened in 1998. So
okay.
I came on this crew as an usher in December. And 6 months later, they decided to reopen the older, what was then Eames, now PACCAR, IMAX
okay.
Theater. And they needed some more projectionists. So I came up in there. And then kind of the rest is history. I've also been a laserist here as well. So stayed in the technical AV field, but always been projectionist.
What is that? Was it a laserist?
Laserist. So the Laser Dome over on the other corner of the Science Center does laser rock shows like Pink Floyd,
oh,
Led
okay.
Zeppelin,
yeah,
and some newer ones as well. And so I've worked in the three theaters.
What was the name change from Eames to PACCAR? Is that
so? During the World's Fair, they played the House of Science and Powers of Ten. That were Eames. They created by Howard and Charles and Ray Eames. And
okay.
So back then, they played those films, and
okay.
It was very known as that. So when they opened up the IMAX Theater in 1979,
mm-hmm.
they decided to call it the Eames Theater, in kind of an honor. And so when they redesigned it, PACCAR Corp actually donated a large amount to renovate the theater and bring it up to the current technical digital standards at the time. And so instead of keeping the name, they brought in the seat design of the dot pattern for Eames and stuff. So there's definitely an homage to the Eames Theater, but officially the name change happened.
Gotcha. Okay. And that's that one was renovated in 2011?
Correct. Opened right at the end of the year.
Okay. Was it an IMAX theater before that point? Or?
It was. Okay. It had an original just 2D IMAX film system and an old style real platter system.
Okay. Was it a taller screen then in there as well?
Actually, slightly a couple feet shorter. It was a retrofit, so it was never quite the IMAX ratio screen.
Right.
So, but it was still really tall, 35 feet tall. I think it's now 37.
Okay.
And about 60 feet wide.
Okay. The Boeing IMAX theater is the one we're right next to at the moment. and has that been called Boeing all along?
It's been called Boeing all along, yes.
It's got this kind of like a dome shape from the outside. Was there ever another purpose for this space? Or
this whole building and the next gallery over, the Ackerley Gallery, were both built and opened in 1998 with the Butterfly House as well. And it was just purposely built to be an IMAX theater, but they decided to put a dome over it. I don't understand the reasoning why, but we have our laser dome in a square building and our flat screen IMAX in a round building.
Well, yeah, it looks cool from the outside, so I'm not complaining. So tell me a little bit about the IMAX film process for you as a projectionist, like before the digital transition. I thought I saw a video from one of your projectionists online when Interstellar was playing here, like loading up the platter and, you know, threading everything. And
yeah, it's so
I didn't see it when I looked yesterday, so I'm like wondering if it still existed.
Yeah, it's an interesting process. When we get prints, they come in pieces and reels, just like 35 would.
Sure.
But for the difference is for a 2.5 hour movie, it would come in 8 or 9 pieces for 35. Well, when we get it, it's going to be about 40 pieces for a 2D print. Now double that for a 3D print.
Right.
So we've got to cut and splice those all together into one piece. And the hardest part is that the soundtrack and no cues are actually on the film. There's nothing to tell it. So we have to be really precise when we put it together because we can't skip a frame or anything or the sound is off. That's the, kind of the hardest start. So it'd be several hundreds of pounds of film coming in. Mm-hmm. Like Interstellar was 600 pounds of film on the platter.
Wow.
We build it directly on the platter. It stays there until we're done with it. So, and then we'll cut it down into 2 to 3 pieces, large pieces, and it goes out in giant silver cases so that they can ship easily once it's built up. So we usually got them fresh and new, built them, put them up, and then someone else got a much easier build after us.
Gotcha. So was it, can it kind of take me through the process of like, so that when that comes in, is that like the first thing you do is you're building it onto a platter, or is it, I assume you have multiple things going at the same time because you've got, you know, the science content during the day and then, you know, the Hollywood content in the evening.
Yeah.
Do those all live on separate platters or how does that work?
So as far as when it comes in, we have to build overnight. Mm-hmm. So we don't have any of the other equipment running. So we'll have this booth sometimes operating 24 hours a day during a print build.
Oh, wow.
Because it'll take, for example, Interstellar took about 12 hours to put together. Mm-hmm. If it was 3D, it's 24 hours to put together. Okay. And so we get it a week in advance. And so we'd have a projectionist working the day shift, a projectionist working in the night, and then whoever else is available coming in overnights at about midnight or 1. And the first thing we're doing is we're getting them out of their boxes, out of their pieces, making sure they're all there. Mm-hmm. And then we cut and splice. We wind it on. It takes about 15 minutes per reel. Mm-hmm. And then we find the end. We cut it. And it's got like a sawtooth cut pattern. Mm-hmm. And then we splice it together and we put the next one on. And then after it's all put together, we got to run it through and make sure the soundtrack loads and plays with it as well. So the soundtrack comes on like a DVD and we copy it onto the hard drive.
So how often, like, would you have a new print come through that you would have to build like that?
When it was film, probably the fastest we ever had was about every 2 weeks. But that was rare. It would be like the summer, you know, the opening of summer tends to be really busy with movies. So we'd have a pretty substantial build schedule. Mm-hmm. But usually about once a month was about as often as it would be on average.
Are the more science films, are those, is that the same kind of process?
It is the same process. They do have the makeup tables most projectionists are familiar with for building up prints. Mm-hmm. And we can actually build a documentary on that makeup table. So it can go a lot faster because it can spin a lot faster. The actual running platters, we have to build the large Hollywood films on. Mm-hmm. aren't built to move that fast, and they can't do that weight.
Oh, okay.
But a makeup table is built to handle documentary size, so it can spin a little bit faster. We can get those done usually during the day. We're not utilizing that equipment, so we could have someone come in during the day over on the side and build that up.
And those are usually around like half an hour or so?
About 40 to 45 minutes.
Oh, okay. So I was here on opening night to see Interstellar.
Nice.
And whoever the representative was who was kind of introducing the film said that that was going to be the last film on like IMAX on film. And that, you know, of course, after that, you guys are doing the renovation to install the new digital and laser system. Do you know, have you heard about that? Is like the only, there's no more film being produced as far as IMAX goes? Or is it?
IMAX is still doing documentaries. It was supposed to be the last Hollywood film, but there are a handful of theaters, especially in institutions, that mm-hmm. have not been able to do the either scheduling because they're changing over laser systems as fast as they can.
Right.
But especially the dome theaters, there's right. not a dome system that's been like pushed out the door yet. They're working on it very hard at IMAX.
What used to be called Omnimax?
Yes, yeah. Exactly.
Okay.
And so they've, like in California, there's a location mm-hmm. that they got Star Wars and they play it on their dome and they got it on film.
Oh, wow.
So they'll make a handful of prints because there's theaters that are either far enough down the line or haven't been able to commit to that transition yet for
sure.
equipment reasons or money reasons.
Okay.
But most places don't get the film anymore. It's just a small amount. It's a special operation, kind of like Quentin Tarantino in The Hateful Eight.
Right.
You know, they just put out like 100 prints and that was it.
That roadshow. So when that run ended, was that February when that run ended?
January 3rd.
Oh, okay.
So it was right off the bat.
Oh, yeah. Was it? Okay. And then that's when you guys closed the theater, started doing the renovations. Mm-hmm. I assume like the seats and stuff was all done first before you put the new screen in.
Oh, yeah. Screen was the last thing to
go
up right before we opened.
So how did that transition go?
The transition went pretty smoothly. It was the same construction company that had done PACCAR. So they knew a lot of the stuff already. They'd been through it. So it actually, Boeing went really, really smooth. And they had done the seats and everything over there as well. So just on a bigger scale with a different system and some different electrical type stuff that they had to get hooked up and everything like that.
Sure. And was there a new sound system that went in at the same time? Or?
Yes. Okay. So we got completely new everything from the lighting used to be in the ceiling, so you'd have to put up scaffolding to get to it. Now it's on lowering trusses, so we can make sure the lighting stays on and is working and functioning.
Yeah.
The seats got changed out, carpeting changed out, new screen, new sound system and added speakers. So now we've got a 12-channel sound system instead of the six.
Okay. But now the laser system is in here. Can you tell me a little bit about that and how that compares to the film system that was in here?
That's a hard question to answer in a way. I mean, the colors are definitely on par or even a little bit better than film. Because lasers can do any colors.
Sure.
And so that for me, that was the part I was waiting for, to see what they could do with the colors. Because doing laser shows, I can see any multitude of colors. And we have a version 2 of their digital system in PACCAR. And so I've seen the digital, and it does really well. But the laser system's just, it blows me away with the colors. The blacks are black. You can't see the edges of the screen if it's black in space films. Which you could always see that digital gray.
Right. Just that little bit of spill.
Yeah. There's light on the screen.
Yeah. So the one that's in PACCAR, is that that's the DLP, like double 4K system?
So it's two Ks. It
can
be upgraded to 4K, but we went into the venture of getting the laser system first.
Right.
And so it's still a xenon-based system.
Okay.
And this, of course, is laser. So that's the differences you see is just light levels and stuff. The 3D over here, it's not polarized light anymore, so we don't stick anything in front of the light.
Right.
Except the 3D glasses. So
right.
you get the full gamut of that as well.
And this is the newer dichroic 3D lens system, the Dolby 3D, right?
Yeah.
Using for that. Because I saw, was it last year or the year before at NAB when they were first introducing some of the laser projection systems and seeing that the new dichroic laser 3D systems was the best separation I've ever seen as far as 3D stuff
goes. You can tilt your head now because IMAX like to use linear polarization.
Right.
So you couldn't tilt your head. The trade-off to that was it was better than circular polarization because you had more light was able to get through.
Right.
So it's you know, lesser of two evils, I guess, in a way, except you're strapped in sitting up straight.
Right. So is this has the laser projection system now totally supplanted the film? Or do you still have the film projectors for special occasion use, or is it?
Unfortunately, this one got parted about back to IMAX.
Okay.
The other system, actually, over in Packard, we still have the original film system over there. We did upgrade the platter unit system because we needed the space to have both of them. It's a small booth over there.
Yeah.
So, but we did run a print to go with an exhibit during Pompeii, and we ran the Grease film. So it's still operational, but it's, you know, it's an older system.
Yeah.
It takes a little bit of getting used to again. It's harder to find people that can run the film system.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Is that kind of across the industry a thing that you're seeing? That's like, as more things transition away from film, that it's just people don't have that experience anymore?
In some ways, yes. In some ways, no. It's a little bit harder because we've got the IMAX aspect of it, and it's completely different from 35 or 70 or 16 or 8 millimeter films that all kind of are similar. And so once you run one, you can kind of pick up the others really quickly, any little quirks and stuff. But IMAX runs a whole different way. It's a whole different beast. And so you have to, if they haven't run IMAX before, you have to train them. It's an impressive system, but it takes some time getting used to because that thing...
Can you give me an example of like the what the differences are? And
so with any other format, at least the ones that I have run, it feeds through the top vertically down through the bottom. And it's a pretty open setup. You just, you know, there's it's not locked in. Like it has to be at a certain place and loops have to be a certain exact size or bad things happen. You've got ways you can adjust if you're off by a frame line, you know, by one perf on the frame. You've got different things you can do. In IMAX, though, you can't be off. It's locked in. The loops have to be a certain size. And that thing is it's huge, and it's spinning around pretty fast. So if something's off, it can it eats film, basically. You can shred feet of film.
Pretty fast.
Yeah, which think, you don't want to do because, again, the sound's not there, so you've got to count all that. So you got to pick up all those pieces and then find how much you've lost if you do have a crash.
Oh, no.
And count that out and then replace it with black until you can get some replacement footage in.
Oh, wow. So is that something like you could get replacement footage from whoever's sending you the print?
They were sending you we have gotten replacement footage in the past where if we manage to lose enough of, say, if we can figure out it's reel 3, they'll send us a whole new reel 3.
Oh, okay.
And we'll put it in there. Gotcha. Now, if it's not printed at the same time, it could be a little color off, but most people might not notice that necessarily.
Right.
They're a little more picky about it when it's 3D, because then they're printed at the same time, they'll have the same stuff going forward.
And so you don't want left eye and right eye
differences. Exactly. It gets a little confusing.
Yeah, I assume you have a critical eye for that stuff as far as, you know, color and the contrast ratios and all of that. How do you feel the, I mean, aside from the contrast ratios and the color here, like the resolution, everything filling that giant screen, is the lasers comparable to the older film system?
I think it really, it's finally I'm trying to think of the right way to say it. It's finally reached that step in the progression. Like, we were all worried about resolution and film.
Right.
I think I've heard is resolution about 15K.
Right.
But then a few years ago, in all the conferences that I was going to, the big question started to be color. The resolution we're going to see is going to get there. It's getting better each time it jumps and starts. But the color isn't getting there. When's that going to, you know, you have that digital gray.
Right.
The whites aren't white. They're kind of a digital white, kind of cool blue.
Right.
So to see the lasers kind of hit that color mark, knowing that the resolution's there, it's amazing to me. And there have been so many people that I've seen and talked to that, they were staunch film supporters and it finally said, no, now's the time. Now's when you go to digital, now that this laser system is here, and especially the IMAX system.
Right.
They can definitely get those colors locked in just how they need to be and get them looking so real and so crisp. And you don't have a lot of the pixelation, really, that we're having with the regular systems.
Right. How do you feel that affects things consistency-wise as far as like variation between prints and things like that? I mean, it's all... like it's once it's calibrated, it's kind of locked in, and
it really then starts to become more on the system itself. You know, it's not that you might get a bad print, it's or the lamp's getting older, mm-hmm. or things like that. As long as the lasers are on, you've got, you know, they tune them once and they're there, and they're going to be, it's going to be the same show from start to finish. There's no scratches, there's no dust. Dust was a big one for IMAX because they actually, because it was so large, to keep it clean, you had a little field flattener in there and we get dust stuck on it. So you'd have these dust specks pop up and then you could swipe them out of the way. So you'd see these things moving up and down the screen during a show, but now you don't have any of that either.
Yeah.
So, which I kind of miss in a way.
Yeah, I mean, is there some nostalgia for the film aspect of it?
Oh, always, always. I mean, I miss everything from the noise of the projector. Mm-hmm. You know, it's eerily quiet, even though there's fans going. It's the same sound. There's no startup as it starts to go, like a train sound as it starts to chug down the track. You know, I don't have to listen to the crashing sounds anymore when the film gets ripped and torn to shreds, but... Just seeing the little bit of flicker in the frame, which you can still see as they're converting some of the old stock to digital, especially the IMAX documentaries, as they convert, you can start to see, you can pick out which ones were film as the scanning, you know, changes from frame to frame. But yeah, I do miss getting my hands on film. I got an opportunity to be a projectionist for Hateful Eight, luckily, just down at Pack Place.
Oh, yeah, I saw that down there.
Yeah, so that was kind of nice to get my hands on film again, just like this whole nostalgia thing. It was really kind of cool.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
Can you tell me a little bit about that experience?
It was great. I had a friend who actually, who does some different film festivals, and she sent me a message that she had gotten stationed here and doing it, and she had actually worked at building up the prints the month and a half prior.
Oh, okay, yeah.
And I said, hey, can I come check out what the projector looks like? And she sent me back a message the next day saying, actually, if you want to learn and train and do this, we'll let you. I was like, okay. So, nice. Yeah, it was a lot of fun. I mean, for setting up that projector, their techs did a really great job. It had its quirks and had its issues, but it got set up like the day before. So to go into a venue, and they had to move houses at the last minute and they had to, so then the gear wasn't quite matched for the space it was in, and it was on a silver screen instead of a white screen. But we're not going to rehang a screen for 2 week run.
Right.
So, you know, for what it was a lot of fun.
I went and saw it there, and I was like, I felt like, I mean, just to give you a little bit of background on myself, I used to be an online editor for TV stuff. So I'm like used to like, you know, really looking at things with a critical eye.
Yeah.
And I went in there and was like, man, this feels really flickery. And I was like, is this just me? I just haven't seen film in so long.
And I think that's part of it, is we're so used to digital now. You start to notice some of that stuff that was nostalgia. There was some flickery issues with that, but I think we're all more sensitized to that now because we're so used to everything being solid and still and locked in.
Yeah. I think it was only the scenes where it was like bright white snow filling the screen that like it really kind of bothered me a little bit, but other than that, it was a great presentation.
Yeah, no, they did a really good job for the time that they had and the gear that they had.
Yeah,
like I said, it was supposed to be in a bigger house, I guess, so the lamp was a little bit brighter, which helped accentuate the flickering issue a little bit, and the silver screen, which reflects more light, which doesn't help the whole case.
Right.
So it was kind of a compound of things, but it was stuff that they couldn't control. So
yeah.
We'll be back in a moment to get into the projection. But now it's time for the Optical Trivia Contest, brought to you by Cinefex. It's only February, Oscar weekend, in fact, but Cinefex has gone bi-monthly, and Cinefex 145 is already on newsstands now. Cinefex covers Star Wars The Force Awakens, where director J.J. Abrams conjures exotic worlds and bizarre creatures, working with visual effects supervisor Roger Guyette, special effects supervisor Chris Corbold, special makeup effects supervisor Neil Duster Light and Magic, Base FX, Kelvin Optical, Blind Limited, Prop Shop, and Imaginarium Studios. An article on The Revenant features coverage of visual effects by ILM, One of Us, CineSight, MPC Montreal, Halliday Visual Effects with creature effects supervised by Mark Rappaport. This issue also features a VFX Q&A on Ex Machina. Join CineFX behind the scenes of Alex Garland's BAFTA-nominated sci-fi hit, where Alicia Vikander's meticulously preserved during the post-production process, creating a seamless blend of live action and CG animation. CineFX 145 also brings you the newest Bond feature, Spectre, Chris Corbold orchestrated Bond scale practical and on location, while artists at several VFX shops delivered spectacular shots under the supervision of visual effects supervisor Mark Curtis. And The Finest Hours. This epic disaster film features visual effects from After Effects and Scarecrow VFX. All of this in CineFX 145. Order your copy today from CineFX.com. Congratulations to our January contest winner, Brett Patterson. Please send me your mail, your new CineFX subscription. If you want a chance to win your own one-year print subscription to CineFX magazine, all you have to do is answer this question. Other than IMAX, name one special event film process. All of them mentioned in our interview with Douglas Trumbull in episodes 10 and 11. Send your answer to feedback@opticalpodcast.com or use the feedback form on our website by midnight Pacific time, March 15th, 2016. One winner will be randomly chosen from the correct entries. Before we get back, I just want to warn you that the loud fan noise in the projection booth played a little bit of havoc with incoming levels on our recording system, but I believe our Ravenson did a great job cleaning it up. So now let's get into the projection booth of the Boeing IMAX Theater at Pacific Science Center with lead projectionist Jen Bentz.
So we're between shows if you want to walk
over.
Let's
head on over and take a look.
Jen led us from her office next door into the projection booth, a wide open space with two giant IMAX laser projectors in the center.
Wow.
Over to the left are four big cooling boxes, panel, and then a big rack of audio equipment. If you go to our website at opticalpodcast.com, you can see our photographer Amanda Smith's photos of all of them.
So it looks like such a closed black box, like there's a... You know, it's like modern car engines where there's no user serviceable parts, you know?
Yeah, it's kind of that way. We were number four, I believe, that got put in. So there's some things that we've gotten to see and do that most other theaters probably won't get to do and see because we were so early in the process.
Just as far as setting things up and tweaking them the way they want to be?
We've had some parts that have come from other contractors that IMAX is working with.
Okay.
That aren't performing now that they're put under the stress of actual running day to day to day. They're finding out some things about them. They need to go back and,
sure,
you know, redesign them a little bit and make some changes. So we're on the early end of that. So we've had some interesting problems early on that shook out pretty quickly. It was all stuff that wouldn't affect out there, but it would make some headaches for us up here.
Mm-hmm.
But the system has been a great system to have.
So what's the... Can you tell me what we're seeing here and hearing?
So it's all the cooling fans we need for everything. And then we've got four chillers. So we've got two projectors, and we've got two chillers per projector. One chiller is for the red and the blue lasers. The other chiller is for the green lasers.
Oh, wow. You need two chillers just for the green lasers?
So, yeah, one chiller for each green, and then the other chiller does each set of red and blue for both of them. So,
oh, okay.
So... There is more green lasers on than there are red and blue in each projector, which seems a little bit counterintuitive. I don't know how that works.
Because green's the brightest. The human eye is most sensitive to the green, right?
Yeah, but that's what they've got.
Is that a bit of how they do the resolution? Is it more like compressed, like lower information for the red and blue and then more information for the green? Is that how that works?
I'm not exactly sure. IMAX has managed to redesign this whole thing even to not do it in a way that some of the other laser systems were coming out. They're using, I would say, the way it was described to me, all proprietary, but the best way they said was, we're using more of the pure laser light. We're not just taking out the xenon lamp and putting in some lasers and calling it good.
Uh-huh.
Not saying that's how the other ones do it, but
sure,
they've decided to go back in and even try to get more of that pure light without it going through so many mirrors and prisms and stuff.
Okay, I got you.
So that's how they get the amazing colors they get. So the bottom of these guys is the lasers. So each half is all of the lasers in the bottom of each half of the projectors.
Okay. And there's just to clarify, there's two projectors in here. And that's like both the left and right for 3D films.
Correct.
If you're running a 2D film, is it just running out of one projector? Or
running
you
out of
double
both.
Up with, okay.
Yeah, it's running out of both. They do a calibration every morning, both for the sound system and for the lasers to get them to line up and know where they need to be, whether they're playing 2D or 3D.
Wow,
because
okay.
The heat can change things and the...
Really? Okay.
Yeah, the atmospheres can change. where everything sits just a little bit, but it's enough that you might be able to discern that on the screen.
Okay. Wow. Can you take us roughly through what it would take to set up for a screening?
So when the projectionist comes in the morning, they will turn on the chillers, and then we've got to turn on the power to the projectors each, and then we actually have, because of the government regulations over lasers, there are some extra steps, so there are keys on the back to safety switches.
And I see a big red buttons on the back here.
And that's required for lasers as well.
Okay.
Yeah, so those are the big emergency stop. We need to kill power.
In case someone puts their eye right in front of the projector lens.
Kind of. Yeah, okay. Exactly. Do not look into laser with the remaining eye.
Gotcha.
So the right projector is actually the brain of the group. It's
okay.
Got our servers up there for running content from. And all the audio is everything up there. This is kind of the left is kind of a slave projector to the whole thing.
Okay. Is that that's behind one of these panels, I assume?
Yeah. Yeah, so the top of each projector houses all the optics.
Okay.
So they come from the bottom of the laser. It's actually a class 4 laser, so it's the highest classification, most powerful laser.
Wow, okay.
That classification usually up to, cutting through steel.
Right.
But there's lots of little ones, so it helps just, distribute the power through. Feeds up into here all the optics. Up in the top of the right is where the server lives.
Okay.
So, and we can also play extra content out of the back of this projector right here.
This is these USB ports on the back here and HDMI?
HDMI on the back, and then that's how we get the content into the server when we get a new drive.
Okay.
So, going from my 600 pounds of film, so that's how they come now.
Instead of 600 pounds of film?
Yeah, so I need to join a gym now because my workout program's gone away.
So it's just this little silver hard drive.
Yeah.
Just looks like any run-of-the-mill external hard drive that you might get.
Yeah,
exactly. A little
exactly.
Beefier, maybe. Inside a Pelican case.
So they just come like this. We'll get a copy of documentaries on them, or maybe two versions of a Hollywood on here. And our server drive is 2 terabytes.
Okay.
So we can hold half a dozen documentaries, and usually a Hollywood and the next Hollywood that's coming in, so that we've got enough to have everything ready and going.
Why would you get two versions of the Hollywood film? Is that
sometimes they'll have
just a backup or 2D, 3D? Or?
Depends on the distributor. Sometimes they'll put a couple languages on there.
Okay.
And they'll just that'll be their master drive. They're copying everything off.
Oh, I see. Okay.
We don't play much. It's in other languages.
I'm hearing the sounds of a hawk coming from a speaker.
That's our lake noises.
That's just idle noises inside the theater?
Yeah, it utilizes the 12 channels, so we'll have bird noises going across and an owl hooting off in one corner.
Excellent.
And, bullfrogs over here.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's some weird noises. So...
So you've got it loaded, loads into the back of the projector unit here, and then it's...
We come in here and the projectionist in the morning, when they start up, it goes through its calibration automatically. It warms everything up, gets everything the optimal humidity and temperature, does the calibration, and then we just have to load the shows as we want.
There you go.
So we've got our show list that we build here,
mm-hmm.
and we can put on any content that we want that we've got in here. So we load the content in,
mm-hmm.
and then hopefully they've sent us a key that will unlock it.
And those are shipped separately to you? Is that
they email
those
to us? Those?
Oh, I see. Okay.
So it's just a file that goes
right.
in, and the system
just an SSH key kind of.
Yeah. So the system finds it. It says, "Oh yeah, you match this DCP over here, and it's on the server that we match the key to as well. So you've got everything you need." And then they can set the key to lock and unlock that file down to the minute.
Wow.
So we've had some shows, a couple shows where. We're letting in the crowd before it actually unlocks. So we're sitting here going, I hope this works. We can't test our content. We can't test our lighting cues or anything like that.
Oh, man.
So we just run it, and the projectionist is here. Going, okay, the lights went down. That's good. Okay.
Is that, I would assume with the film, you would actually run through and preview some of the film before the first screening of it?
Oh, yeah. So we would get to... We would always have our little, especially the bigger films, we're like, I'm sorry, we have to run this. We have to preview it ourselves.
Right.
And so we'd be in here at 3 in the morning watching it, but we'd be watching it for splices. We've had some instances in the past where there's been mistakes that have come from the printer.
Right.
And so we've spent some time fixing those, or we have to get a new piece.
Okay.
But we make sure everything runs. We find the times. We'd have to find the times to put the lighting cues in and program it into the soundtrack. Because in the old way, the soundtrack was what drove all the lighting cues. Now it's all together into one.
Oh, I see. Gotcha.
So.
Just so that, just to clarify on the lighting cues, that's like when the lights go down at the start and when they come up at the, during credits and
they go
sort
down
of
halfway
things.
For trailers, and then they go down for the feature.
Gotcha.
And then they come up a little bit for credits.
Okay.
A lot of people like to leave before the credits are
sure.
You know, done.
I don't know why, but I stay for the credits all the time.
Some credits are just too long to stay for.
That's just me.
There's sometimes there's good with that. I think everybody keeps thinking there's some special scene, and there's not as much anymore, I think, is why, because they'll be down there on their phones.
Yeah.
They're not paying attention to the credits at all, which is unfortunate.
I like to watch them just to watch them. You know.
It's fun to see who's in the credits. Sometimes it's like, oh, they were
sometimes
on
I know
one.
A person,
And then when they load it up, it loads into here, and then once it's loaded in, the buttons will gray out until we're ready to go.
Okay.
And then once it says, yep, I'm all set. We just hit play, and away it goes. When it was filmed, we used to sit right here with the projector right here.
Yeah.
And so we had the ear, you know, either earplugs or headphones to keep the noise down because it got really loud up here.
I bet. I see you have a pair of 3D glasses on the windowsill looking out onto the screening room. Is that to just double-check the 3D?
Mostly it's to come out when we do checks every so often, about every 10, 15 minutes. We'll come out and watch for a few minutes and make sure the 3D is hanging in there and stuff. We've got other stuff we need to be doing as well. So
just that, like, you come out into the auditorium and
no, we actually here the projectionist is dedicated to the booth.
Oh, okay. Gotcha.
So yeah, we're one of the few locations anymore that actually has dedicated projectionists.
Yeah.
So we don't leave for any reason once the show starts.
Wow.
Yeah.
that's nice.
That's why we have a restroom and half a kitchen up here.
Excellent.
To allow us to be able to survive a shift.
Excellent. So what's in these racks over here?
So this is the sound system and the power distribution for the system. So we have all of the amps here for all the speakers and all the channels. We have in here all the automation, so what connects to the lighting system to tell it what to do and to tell it what to switch over to, or if we choose to take another input from there, like different microphones, it handles all of that. IMAX has this Nexus system that helps keep the sound system sounding good. So it calibrates this in the morning, and it's got all the... When the theater was installed, we brought in a person that did a tuning of the theater and had their optimal location, tuned all the speakers, got the right frequencies, and then this compares it every morning back to that original tuning make sure that everything's running right. So it can tell us if a speaker's starting to go bad, if a tweeter is starting to go out on a speaker, it'll start failing, and it can tell us what's failing, and we can go check that.
Oh, wow, that's great.
Yeah, so it gives us feedback. So when you see something on day one, it should sound the same on day 463.
Yeah, wow.
Provided all this goes along.
Okay.
And then, of course, backup for some of the integral systems.
Right.
In case the power flickers. Yeah. And a whole separate battery cap. Not for the lasers, but for everything else.
Nice. So how many amplifiers is this that you've got in here?
We've got 12 channels, and then we've got our subs. And I think these are the subs.
And two sub channels.
So we've got some good bass in here.
How many speakers are actually in the auditorium?
So there are, I don't know how many subs got put in offhand. It might be... It's the same as PACAR. It's like 12 sub cabinets, but then they do the using it facing each other, so it reverberates a little bit more and amplifies to come out.
Right.
So they actually, you know, get even more bass out of it than just sticking some speakers up there.
What's the toughest time you've ever had in the booth? Is there anything gone not quite right?
A few times.
Yeah.
I had one of my projectionists tried to do this once, and it didn't work out so well, and I shouldn't have done it in the first place. We had a really tight turnaround with the film, and I was tired, not to excuse this, but I was tired, and accidentally ran the film over a bar instead of over the roller.
Oh.
So it was scratching the film, and it was scratching it on its way into the projector.
Oh.
So I guess the lucky part was I could catch that.
Mm-hmm.
But instead of stopping the film, I actually stuck a glove between the bar and the film, got the wrenches out, moved the roller out of the way, and slid the film onto the roller while it was running, and then tightened it all back up and kept it running.
Wow.
My projectionist later tried to do the same thing because he had heard the story.
Oh, no.
And it didn't end up so well.
Oh, no.
So that was 200 and something frames of damaged film of one eye of a 3D film.
Oh, wow.
So I just remember when that happened, I'm up here trying to help him pull this away, and he just looks at me and goes, "So are you really okay with this? Or are you really mad and you're going to yell at me later? Are you going to do it again?" "Well, no." "Okay." "I'm not going to yell at you. You learned a lesson. There's nothing I could say." So there's been some interesting. We've had some of us who have kind of lived in this booth for, you know, Avatar Build was the first epic build we did.
Yeah.
And so we had lost a couple projectionists right before that. So it was a shift of someone taking a nap off to the side, someone operating, someone going home and taking a shower.
Oh, wow. You know,
because then they get a nap so they could drive home.
Yeah.
Safely.
Yeah.
And, yeah, it got... We've had some long, long hours in this booth, but wow. It's been a lot of fun. It's been a good time. And I kind of miss some of those long film builds.
Yeah.
You know, as crazy as it sounds.
What do you... What would you say you like best about doing this gig? Is that...
What, projection in general,
yeah.
Or, oh, man. You know, for me, it's, since I've been here at the Science Center, there's been times where I've been able to, while another projectionist is running, be down at the back of the theater while the families are leaving.
Yeah.
And have the kids go, "That was the best thing ever! Or did you see that bear?"
Yeah.
"Oh, I want to do that." And so see, nice. In this setting, to see the kids start to light up and start to want to get interested in that.
Yeah.
I mean, when they walk in this theater sometimes, if they've never been in, they're just like, "Wow, it's so big." And then they get totally immersed. There's times we don't need the glasses because you get 300 kids stretching out for the 3D. We're like, "Oh, it's working. All right." So it's
nice.
It's just to watch them start to have some fun with it and to know that I'm, even though they don't know I'm here,
mm-hmm.
you know, I'm helping them see what they can do and start to open up their minds to other possibilities of things. It's awesome to watch them.
Very cool. Is there going to be a little action in here as you get set up for the 7 o'clock show?
Yeah, so what time is it?
It's about 8 minutes, 7 minutes.
Yeah, so what will happen is the usher will call up once they've gotten everybody in, and then you'll see him. We'll come on over, and I'll kind of talk him through what he's doing.
Okay.
Jen indicates a bright blue light on the side of the projector.
Yeah, when these first came in, I had to put these gels over them to dim the light because they thought these bright white lights were a good idea.
Bright.
So we had some of the guys from IMAX here for opening week, and they're like, "You need to turn your booth lights off." We're like, "It's your projection system. It's not us." So I quickly made up these gels.
Oh, wow.
It's a dark blue gel to cover up the searing white light.
Which then one of the IMAX techs said, "Can I take one of those back and show the guys?" Sure.
Nice.
That's so cool. All right. They've got the hood over it because of the laser regulations. That's why we've got a hood over the front like this. This bellows.
Right, so you can't get in there.
Yeah, all these tubes.
And that's all the coolant stuff?
That's all the chiller cables. Kind of like our install tech was like, it's kind of like looking at NASA, like a launch pad.
I stand at the window to the right of the projector, overlooking the auditorium.
So yeah, you are standing where one of our real systems used to be.
Yeah.
And then the other one used to be where the chillers are. That sound rack was twice as big and moved this way. Our control console was about four times as big as this one is now.
Wow.
So, and this is only, it's shorter, but wider than our film system was, the two projectors together. So, this booth was pretty packed with gear beforehand.
Wow.
So we're like, now what do? Do we get a foosball table, or?
I love that you have the back of the booth open so that people can see in
yeah.
as well. That's very cool.
Did you get the call?
As David Dukart checks in over the radio with the usher in the auditorium.
Are you ready for a CD?
Give us just a minute.
Oh, okay.
So, because Lake Sounds is a playlist, he is going to stop that and turn that down for
right.
our usher to be able to give their intro speech.
And they turn it up so I can actually hear what they're seeing.
She got up to 9 the other day.
Wow.
Fourth time? Fifth time? Nope, 6. Yeah! 7? 7? Well, 9, 7. 8? 8? No? Okay, I think All right, sit back, relax, and may the force be with you.
So he's ejected the show. It's kind of like a tape deck. We'll eject it, and then he loads up a new one, which is Star Wars. And we've got different trailers for Star Wars, depending on what time of the day we're showing it. So we can keep it more family-friendly during the day, and we can have some of the other stuff like Deadpool on for this one.
Okay.
So that allows us some flexibility as well, which is nice for digital.
I have not gotten sick of this song yet.
So what is this that you're playing right now?
It's a little sound intro. So if you look at the amps, you'll notice that more and more amps are going to start having audio sound. So it started off saying there was no sound in the beginning. Now there was mono, so one amp, like the main speaker's just putting it out.
Gotcha.
Then it says now there's stereo. So now you got the right and the left doing stuff. And so they gradually introduce the speakers, and now they've got all 12 going. And so it kind of walks you through the advent of sound and how it's changed through the years.
Nice.
And what we've got now with this IMAX system. As far as the projector sounds, it sounds exactly the same whether it's running a show or not. So it's a little anticlimactic for us now.
Yeah.
But at least our hearts stay beating at the same pace the entire time.
Yeah.
Because
you don't get that ramping up to speed. And
yeah, and the larger the prints got, the bigger the motors got and the gears got. So it would kind of jerk in the beginning, with especially the large ones.
Oh,
which
yeah.
You really kind of were like, okay, stay put. Stay. Okay.
Those were the days.
And this screen we're looking at out the booth window here, it's 60 feet by 80 feet? Is that
That's correct.
The size?
Okay. 6 stories tall and 80 feet wide. Showing the largest film format in the world. Yeah, that was our old pre-show.
Yeah.
I ran a few films. So, and it's also a silver screen on both sides to help with the 3D.
Mm-hmm. I guess that's not technically necessary anymore because of the dichroic 3D with the lasers, right?
Yeah, it's not necessary. On this system, I've seen it on a white screen.
Mm-hmm.
I got to see another company demo their laser system once, and they did it on a white screen.
Uh-huh.
And it looked really good to me. Mm-hmm. With a silver screen, you can get the brightness that IMAX wants.
Yeah.
So what they've done, because a silver screen also reflects more, and photons for lasers tend to be very one-directional.
Right.
You're going that way.
Yeah.
So when it reflects, it's going to reflect one direction, and you start to get that speckle.
Right.
The halo effect.
Right.
So we've got 80 screen shakers behind the screen.
Wow.
Shake the screen just to scatter that
for
light.
For a screen
so
that size.
Yeah,
because I heard about that being an issue with the laser systems, like that speckle issue.
Yeah, that was the big thing they had to get over it. And one of the ways, there's another way I think someone's figured out to do it on the projector side.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure what that is, though. I haven't seen it in effect. I've just seen screen shakers.
Uh-huh.
So, and it really can be affected by the theater environment, too, because if they have to be so close to the screen itself to help. But if the screen sags because it's too warm, it starts to rest against the screen shakers.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and then you get the little point of it on the screen, or you see the ripples of the audio that's going through, because it's just a bunch of audio that's going through those things.
So with a screen that size, you actually do have some expansion and contraction due to heat? Or
yeah, so we've been keeping a real close eye on that kind of stuff to make sure it's not contracting. There's a larger screen in San Francisco, and they had that problem when they first installed, that they had to find that sweet spot a little bit and play with the controls of the theater a little more, because it was starting to sag into the shakers, and then it'd be fine and sag again. But we haven't really had that problem here at all.
So how do the shakers work? Is it a physical connection to the screen, or is it like an audio, kind of like a sonic vibration?
They're mounted to the screen tower itself. They're not touching the screen at all.
Gotcha.
And I think it's an audio thing, but I think it's a specific parameter that they figured out.
Gotcha. They're playing the Deadpool trailer right now.
Yeah. We can start listening to that tomorrow night.
So one more screening of Star Wars after this one?
So we've
Tomorrow's 4 o'clock?
Yeah. And then that'll be it. Sometimes we move some over to the other theater, to Packard, and continue the runs. And they've decided to just call it good. We just did The Revenant over there, actually.
Oh, really?
Yeah. That was a lot of fun.
Hmm.
This is the National Parks trailer.
Yeah, I'll have to come back and see that one.
Yeah. There will be a space one coming out. A beautiful planet, so it'll have some space sauce, I'm sure. It's by Tony Myers, who did Hubble and Dream is Alive and all of those.
Excellent.
And I think they're working on it now. Set a camera up in September, I think. They had one that got launched, like, right in the middle of the conference. Oh, like, wow. It's up there now. Hurrah. And that'll really show off, because if we ever bring Hubble back in here, mm-hmm. it's gorgeous, because yeah. it's got that depth of color
yeah.
with the blacks and the whites and everything. So it's pretty amazing.
Yeah, I used to watch a bunch of this stuff at the Smithsonian.
Oh,
the
yeah.
there, because I moved out here from Maryland oh, okay. a couple of years ago.
So. They're getting their second laser system.
Yeah. And then we got the big 3D IMAX trailer.
Yep. Sometimes they'll actually... I was a little disappointed they didn't do it with this one. But they'll sometimes play with it. Like Godzilla, you hear Godzilla stomp.
Uh-huh.
And it would shake.
Yeah.
And so my projections, the first time they saw it, they thought something was wrong with the projector because of the shaking on the screen. So yeah, we get surprised every once in a while. Or the filmmaker will build a technical glitch into it. Like Tomorrowland was uh-huh. sometimes shot through like oh, right. security cameras, and right. it would like glitch out. And the projections, what just happened? What? No, it's okay. Okay. You know. Would the filmmaker stop doing that? Because that's the thing with digital. You don't have a chance to see or hear something's going wrong. It's a computer. If it right. decides it's done, it's done.
Yeah.
There's no warning. Like with film system, you might hear a gear starting to go, or you hear the film start to slap right. around a little bit, and you know something's wrong, you can check on. And maybe either stop the film and reset,
mm-hmm.
or after the show, okay, I need to replace this part or not run to that deck anymore.
Right. They don't give you a list of, like, here's where the glitches are in the film. These are intentional.
No, we don't get any show lists anymore. Nice. We used to get continuity sheets with the film so we could help put it together.
Right.
Which was always interesting, because it'd be, like, the last picture would be, this guy moved stage right medium wide shot to this, and I'm looking at two frames. Going, okay, sure, that looks like he's moving to the right. Yeah.
Well, thank you very much.
Yeah, you're
I really
very
appreciate
welcome.
You spending the time with us.
Yeah, no problem. Anytime I can talk about this stuff. No one knows we're up here, so it's nice to remind people that we're here.
Yeah, definitely.
So thank you for coming.
Yeah.
You can find our website and the show notes for this episode at opticalpodcast.com. You can also book and SoundCloud at username Optical Podcast. And if you haven't already, please subscribe to the podcast. It's free and easy to do. Just search for Optical Podcast on iTunes or follow the link from our website. And if you like on iTunes, it really helps us reach new listeners. Big thanks to Cinefex for helping sponsor us, and you can head to cinefex.com to order issue 145 covering Star Wars, The Force Awakens, The Revenant, Ex Machina, Spectre, and... You can also get the new issue in the Cinefex iPad app along with every back issue of the magazine. Just follow the link on our website. Thanks again to Jen Bentz for chatting with us, projectionist David Ducart, and Caitlin Del Buco for... You can read more about Pacific Science Center and their IMAX theaters at pacsci.org. Thanks to our dialogue editor, Joseph Ravenson. Thanks to Digital Drew for all of the music in this episode. You can find more of his music at Digital Drew. DROO.com. And thanks to Mike Gower for designing our Aperture logo. I'm your host, Mark Bosco. See you next time.
Scary monkey.